Hey, I'm Terry Foy.
And I'm Nick Osello. Welcome to the tailgate.
Welcome back to the podcast. This one went a little long. We're recording on Monday night because Nick had to go see his Notre Dame Fighting Irish fall short in the round of 32, the men's basketball tournament on Sunday. Nick, your hangover was a 6.4. Unfortunately, your team didn't advance to the Sweet 16.
Terry, the next day, it's a good story. I went, I had full plans to have a $100 budget for tickets. And then I just snuck in. I just walked right in and no one stopped me. So I snuck into the Notre Dame playoff March Madness game. It was an incredible game. And here's a funny little story. I am clearly a big Notre Dame fan, and I go with Eli Gobrecht, Sykes, and Trey LeClaire, three Seals players. And because I'm a big Notre Dame fan, I didn't give them any of my Notre Dame gear. I gave Eli a polo, but I was like, no, Trey and Sykes, you guys don't get anything. So they decided to be Texas Tech fans.
Oh, no.
For the day. And just, you know, ribbing you like good teammates and, you know, good friends do. So I'm like clearly pissed off. They know when to stop, but somewhere out there, there is a video because as the clock hit zero, I am sad. I am legitimately sad. I am defeated, and I was pretty drunk for the game. So I was, you know, I'm a great guy to go to a game with because I just yell stuff that I think gets the people going. I'm like, great bucket by Notre Dame. My life sucks. And everybody just kind of like laughs. And so I was being an idiot all game. And as the clocks hit zero, and as the actual sadness and the perpetual depression of being a Notre Dame fan sets in, some like probably 23-year-old girl comes up, phone recording, light flashlight on, literally puts it right in my face. And because we're a family-friendly podcast, I can't exactly say what I said to her in real time, but I flipped the bird. So somewhere out there, there's a video of just some lady walking up to a bald guy and the bald guy flipping her off and yelling. So I don't know. Upon reflection, it was a good story. I wouldn't trade anything, but my goodness, I just want Notre Dame to win something at some point. The girls' team just killed Oklahoma like 108-64. So I love that, but that didn't make yesterday any easier. And sorry for bailing. I was hungover and tuned up.
You big women's basketball fan?
Am now, have been since Arike Ogunbowale hit that bucket, and I just started screaming. So, yeah.
All right, we are here to talk about lacrosse. And that's right. This week, talking about lacrosse talks about the Big Ten eviscerating the ACC as the University of Maryland went to Audi Field and decided that two dozen goals was too much to put on the University of Virginia. So instead, they beat them 23-12. Luke Wehrman went 24-36, the faceoff X. So that's not a deficiency for the Terps going forward. 13 different players registered a point. King Khan, who I think most considered to be Maryland's second option heading into this game, was the leading scorer with 7 points. Cade Sostad came back for the Cavaliers. So even though I don't think they were necessarily at full strength, they had their quote-unquote number one defender, which I think he is, but I also think that Cole Kastner is a number one defender as well. There's a lot to unpack from this game, and we're going to bring in an expert momentarily. But before we do, what are your thoughts?
Sure makes Notre Dame's two-goal loss look good. So how about that? How about them Irish?
Keep but spinning.
It is simply another product of I cannot identify a hole. I don't understand how you game plan to beat the Terps. They are solid in offense, defense, transition, face-off, goalie, coaching. I was reading something, it might have even been in the Slack, about how the biggest catalyst and the biggest difference between a team like Maryland and a team like Syracuse right now is the number one guy on Maryland's Wisnowkis I probably just pronounced that wrong. I don't care. Cry about it. Shut up. That's a tough word for me as I have my first cocktail of the day.
I can tell that you're Italian, not Polish.
Yeah. What's his name? Giovanni Wisnaukis.
Yeah, exactly.
But his willingness and ability to be just as good of a distributor as the number one dodging and scoring threat versus a guy like Dordovic, who for what looks like their game plan is ISO him and make him do 100% of the work. That is, I think, the biggest difference, because this Maryland offense, if you take away one of the threats, his ability to distribute and the unselfishness is what is truly separating the Maryland, this Maryland team, from every other ACC team. And it pains me to say it, and I don't like Maryland, and Old Bay is not a personality, and the Ravens fan base is a bunch of losers, and the flag's overrated, but this Maryland team is the best, most well-rounded team I've seen in a very long time.
So we're going to turn to Brian Phipps with this question of unselfishness. So Brian, what you didn't hear Nick just lay out, which was an incredibly insightful thought, I know it's hard to believe, was that Logan Wisnowski's role as the number one, both like literally and metaphorically, puts him in a position where when he is so willing to pass up a good look for a great look, that's when this team becomes the number one shooting team in college lacrosse, and a team where you don't really even have to concern yourself with who the primary initiator is, because they're one of those holy grail teams who functions based off ball movement. So you can answer this question in any number of ways. A former Maryland goalie, a former college lacrosse coach, a current high school coach. Combining all of those points of view into one, talk about Maryland's offense from the standpoint of how unselfish they are.
I mean, it's pretty impressive with the ball movement, and kind of, like you said, best shot is the most important shot, not a good shot, but the best shot. And it's pretty impressive for 18 to 23 year olds to buy in and trust each other, and kind of, like you said, the unselfishness of the team goal rather than individual goals. And kind of Coach Ford at Spalding mentions, like, it doesn't matter who scores as long as we score.
So I'm sure Nick has a lot to say about pickleball, about whether or not you're going to give him details on when he's supposed to be at Spalding to call one of your games this spring. But before we get to that, why are you friends with him?
Be careful. Be careful here.
Nick and I have crossed paths a few times in the professional cross world, and have a lot in common in terms of off the field activities that we enjoy. But it's his you know, his good looks and his humor. You know, makes me look good by being friends with him.
Nick, before you jump in, please ask a question about Maryland, and then you can have free reign.
I have to answer a question about Maryland?
Yes. That is the baseline expectation for this being a functioning podcast.
All right, this lacrosse podcast, I'll talk about lacrosse. But, I mean, there's only so many ways that you can say it, but...
Yeah, no. We don't have to blow them up that much more than we already have.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you know, it really is fascinating to watch, as Phipps just called out, 18 to 23-year-olds pass up shots for, like, the backside action. And it's – Terry, I was talking about the Notre Dame teams, or maybe it was someone else, but they're almost like lack of vision and unsettled at some point in the last couple episodes. But – I truly think the most difficult role a lacrosse coach has, and it's the biggest jump from high school to college, and it's the biggest jump from college to pro, is just the under pressure decision making. And to, like, watch a guy make a mistake in college on, like, a fast break, for example, or to take a step down shot when the one more on the backside of the crease is wide open. That's the kind of stuff that like I personally cringe at, and that's the only time I really yell at the TV at kids is I'm like, dude, how did you not see the guy on the backside? Meanwhile, my freshman year, I was, you know, the most selfish blinders on player that ever existed. So I have to give credit to Tillman for, I don't know what his coaching approach is. I don't know what their practice structures look like, but what they do better than everyone else is have the practice and have the vision, and most of all, have the unselfishness to say, hey, I know this is a good shot, but I know my teammates well enough and I know this offense well enough to know that if I pass it up, it's very likely going to be a better goal or a better opportunity at least. So I think a lot of that just has to be credit for the coaching. And is that good enough lacrosse? Can I talk about one of my favorite memories with Phipps and why we're friends?
Give me a chance to respond.
Okay, Phipps, go.
No, I mean it is impressive what they've got going, and I think like the th it's not like they reinvented the wheel, just sharing the ball across and making that simple one more pass and drawing a slide and simple success wins, and that's kind of what you see Maryland producing right now.
Boy, was Mackenzie crying last night? You sound like you're about to fall asleep on us.
She has been under the weather the past couple of days,
Oh, God, I
so did
hate to
not get
hear that.
much sleep last night,
Is there anything I can do to
but we're
help?
good. No, she does miss Uncle Nick though.
Oh, my goodness, I can't wait to see her. Okay, so why Brian Phipps and I are friends? Yes, we have the same taste in what we like to do after games, but I think one story can explain it all. And that was in Boston at Redwoods camp. You know, we get the rosters, you know, there's three unbelievable goalies, you know, all this stuff. I'm obviously a healthy scratch. I just retired to save that relationship that I got dumped a couple months later, sick brag. Bottom line, me and Phipps are off for the night, and we're just looking at each other, and we're like, "Hey, what are you doing?" Other, you know, some of these rookie guys are like super upset they're not on the active roster. They're like, "Oh, I think I'm just gonna pout and cry in my room." My favorite memory from training camp happened at none other than Red Robin because Brian Phipps and I wanted to catch up and hang out like good old pals. We don't care where it is. We don't care when it is. It happened to be at a Red Robin in whatever Patriot Way place. All these bars were all closed. They were the only place that had had an ice cold Coors Light waiting for us. We don't care the situation. We just care that there's another good man to have a good conversation with across from us, and that's what we bring to each other, and that's why we're great friends to this day.
Correct. Rekindling that flame from the Bayhawks days in Annapolis.
It was so great. And then on the road trip, I just got to go stay with you. And that was like honestly one of the highlights of the entire road trip. So, and thank you for letting me crash on your very dark basement couch. One of the best sleeps
Yeah.
I've gotten ever.
It's had quite a few people stay on that couch, though.
Brian, when I think of our friendship, there are two outings that come to mind.
Oh, yeah, you got to one up me, huh?
No, I'm just curious as to what his predominant memory is. Because one of them was at Patriot Place, the other is in Vienna, Virginia. Which one is the more significant?
I think the Vienna, Virginia one was Combro Chill's concert because it was such a random experience, and I went solo just and then ran into you guys. So it was fun supporting a teammate and friend of Connor and enjoying his stuff and seeing you guys there.
Coach speak is so solid out of you right now. I love it. All right, one more lacrosse question. Your brother is the offensive coordinator at Georgetown. They had a 16-6 victory over Utah on the weekend. What are your thoughts on the Hoyas, and what do you think they need to do going forward? They've got Lehigh coming up this weekend, and then they transition to Big East play. They're 6-1, a wagon, as it were. What do you want to see out of Georgetown over the course of the next month and a half?
I mean, I just want to keep watching them play. I know Coach Ford and I have watched that game together and saw a few things that Georgetown ran offensively that we're trying to put in with our high school group at Spalding now. But they're just fun to watch. And obviously, you know, Georgetown goalie is one of the best ones out there. And it's fun watching him play and kind of seeing him, you know, help like dominate a game and help Georgetown win with that defense. And then, you know, the offensive guys making my brother look good doesn't hurt as well.
Nick, do you have anything to say about the Utes?
We're
pro
no,
Ute
another,
podcast.
Yeah, just another chirp at my intern Drew Wasserman for saying that, oh, we're world beaters, we're going to do so good, and then getting slapped around 2 weeks in a row. Beautiful campus. I like their campus, and that's what I will say about their game against Georgetown.
Brian, we appreciate your appearance on the Inside the
Cross
podcast.
I miss you, Phipps. I'm glad we're friends. Love you.
And I'll talk to you soon.
All right, love you.
See you, bud.
I see you again.
Love you.
Love you, Nicholas.
Oh, all right, let's go. Okay.
All right, Nick.
I love that guy.
He's the best. That, I mean, you complain about it when it comes to Westberg all the time, but just these guys' unwillingness to be their off-camera selves on camera.
I like it and I hate it because it's funny and it's something that you can give them crap for.
I will respect it. He's got, you know, 40, 17-year-olds who could potentially listen to this and use it against him. He just sounded like the most boring guy in the world.
He sounded like a tired dad. And that's,
I mean, you're right. I should give that allowance.
As a fatherless, as someone who doesn't have kids, as a kidless person,
a
dad, I love you. I'm sorry, Steve. Steve Ocello is a great father. That's bad.
Hey, Gonzaga's still alive, so I'm sure he's bulletproof at this point.
Go Zags, yeah. Nothing's bringing Steve down today. But as someone who doesn't have kids, anytime it's like, yeah, my kid was sick, you know, this and that, I'm like, I will defer to you because one day my shitty little kid is going to be keeping me up all night and I'm just going to not have anything to, you know, I don't want him to be like, hey, remember when you gave me a hard time and now your kid's keeping you up? You're such an idiot. So I'm going to try and avoid that.
So my question for you, as we transition back to talking about lacrosse, is,
sorry, I'm really,
why
derailed. Yes,
do lacrosse. We talk about college lacrosse in the context of conferences? I understand it in football, where you play like 11 or 12 games and 8 or 9 of them are in conference, and conference strength correlates so strongly with quality of resume. But in lacrosse, where you play like 13 or 14 games and only 5 of them are conference games, just seems like it matters less. And it especially matters less now from the standpoint of, like, if you're Virginia and the ACC is 23-11 out of conference and you're whatever you are, 4-1 out of conference, and you go 6-0 in the ACC, why should that be held against you? I just don't get it. Explain it to
me. I mean, first off, automatic bids and automatic quality, like the AQs.
Yeah, I get that.
At-larges.
Has nothing to do with conference strength, though. The AQs have nothing to do with conference strength. Every conference gets an AQ. It's exactly the idea behind it.
But it lets you know how serious of a threat, how good of a matchup, the strength of your conference. If you do well in tournament play, I think it was like 2017 potentially, that a team that I think it was like Cuse or someone might have went like 1-4 in conference play, but it was the ACC, so they still got an at-large. It helps, you know, it helps your at-large chances, and it's good talking points.
There's no doubt that it helps your at-large chances. I'm not disagreeing or, you know, whatever.
Well, then,
opposing that idea. Then
what's the actual question then? Explain why conferences matter, because it helps your chances of making the playoffs. That seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm...
But okay, hold on. No, okay. I'm not going to let you have the mic.
And I'm going to cut you off soon, so go ahead.
So the ACC sucks. They're 23-11.
First off...
And then they get destroyed. Maryland beats the pants off Virginia, But the league goes 4-1 on the weekend. So explain that to me.
ACC's great. Maryland just had a decent day.
Maryland should be in the ACC. Is that going to be your next
Maryland big talking is point? An ACC team, and it's a disservice that they're not. So I'll ask you this. Who's played Maryland the best this year?
I mean, yeah, you're right.
That ACC team, Notre Dame. So
all right, let's quickly get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Notre Dame 12, Michigan 7. You guys got back on the wagon, on the win wagon. You're 2-3. I remember talking to Kevin Corgan. I don't know, it was probably 2017.
Uh-huh.
Michigan was like starting to turn the corner.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, maybe it was 2016, I don't know, whatever. And I asked him, it was just like at the coaches convention, we were doing all our preseason interviews with the coaches. And I was just like, yes, what do you think of Michigan? And he just goes, expletive Michigan.
And so that actually doesn't give me any insight because it's what expletive, what tone, how is it delivered?
It was the tone that I just used, and it was the expletive that you would assume on the basis of the fact that I didn't just say it.
Yes, I understand that. Was it, oh my God, they're going to be good? They're taking
no, he was like, why are you asking suck? About them? It's not worth my time to talk about Michigan. That was the intonation.
Okay. All right, I won't do it. Anyways, good to get Notre Dame back in the win column, of course. You know, I think it's as much as you probably aren't going to like this, given your take 30 seconds ago. I think it was sneaky important that the ACC has a good showing against the Big Ten. Even if it's supposedly the top dog of the ACC versus a mid-tier Big Ten, I think that's going to come into play at the playoffs, whether it impacts Notre Dame or whether it impacts some random at large. I think these things are starting to matter more and more. So historically, it's like, okay, so when UNC got slapped around by Ohio State, I loved it because I think UNC is a second-rate institution filled with second-class men outside of Joey Sankey. Joey Sankey's a saint. So the reason that I loved that was because it gave me a chance to dog on UNC. But because the ACC is having a down year, now I'm saying, okay, now we need to have a good showing as a conference. I don't have much as far as this game. I think it, you know, you were talking about how they just need to play 20% better. I think just the difference in top to bottom talent on the roster overcame that 20% against Michigan. Didn't see anything particularly different. I think it was a very generic down the middle of the fairway game when you're right, a more talented.
Hold on real quick. Have you ever participated in a feat of strength with Arden Cohen?
I haven't.
Have you ever been on a lacrosse field against him and experienced what it's like when he checks you or tries to match feet with you and prevent you from running around him?
I have not, but I actually would love to.
Okay, well, go do that and let me know how it is, because I really struggle to understand why Josh Zawada, who came in as the leading scorer in college lacrosse, was so reluctant to go at him. And to me, I'm not saying that was the difference in the game, but it was the storyline of the game, because when you look at a 12-7 final for a team that was averaging 18.5 goals through their 7-0 start, you can't help but look at their offense and wonder, why did you only put up 7 goals? And then when you look at their score sheet, you're like, well, Mike Bain played at the level that you would expect him to play at. It was Zawada that fell short. And it wasn't a function of mistakes. It was a function of not. Like, he just didn't do it. And the only thing that I can come to is Arden Cohen is one of the most intimidating people to try to dodge against. And that's the reason. So I wanted some firsthand experience, and unfortunately, the Notre Dame alum I asked wasn't able to provide it. Maybe I need to find a different Notre Dame alum to be my co-host.
Yeah, good luck. Watch the viewership go. Get Jack Neer to come on here and coach speak and break down plays. Shut up, nerd.
Oh, man. Well, unfortunately, we don't have a Denver alum scheduled to join this. So if you want to jump into a Westberg impersonation and talk about the Pioneers' 14-12 win over Ohio State, which once again relegated the Big Ten to second-tier status, feel free to go ahead and do that right now.
I would do a Westberg impression, but it would be an off-the-cuff. I would get him in trouble for what he says about Denver. Just put it like that. Even when they win, and this is just like the Westbirds, the Mike Reese, the guys that I know on that championship team, it's just not good enough. They're like, yeah, we won, but, you know, who cares because we suck this year. So, boo-hoo, DU alum are too hard on the program. This one is the curse of the – I don't know, because it's always been Notre Dame. Anytime Notre Dame has, like, a win or a bad loss – that team goes and makes it look even worse. We lose to Ohio State. They lose to Denver to make it even worse. So I want to hear your takeaway on the actual gameplay before I dive into why DU beating Ohio State doesn't really matter.
Well, I can't give you that because I still haven't been able to watch it because I was calling the Hill Academy versus Spalding while the game was going on. What?
How did that call go well?
Yeah, I listened back to it today, and I was cool with my points, but didn't like my delivery. I thought that my delivery in this format was better. It's a function of the combination of feeling more comfortable talking about college lacrosse than high school lacrosse, specifically when it comes to remembering the numbers of the players and some of the other facts that were associated with it. So it was definitely a reflection of lack of preparation, but I thought that my actual analysis was okay. I want to do it more. I like it. It's fun.
It's fun. It really is. All right.
But anyways, hold on. I didn't watch it live and I haven't watched the replay doesn't mean I don't have something to say about this game.
All right. Go off, Kane.
The two things I have to say about this game are, and I wrote about this, Terry's Top 20. So if you already read it, I apologize for repeating myself. But if you didn't read it, then you'll appreciate it in spoken format. So the first thing is I was impressed by Denver's ability to withstand the fact that they fell behind because falling behind 2-0 and then 6-2 to Ohio State on the road when you're a team that hasn't met your preseason expectations feels like the type of situation when you kind of fold up shop and say, we're going to refocus on trying to win the Big East automatic qualifier. In addition to that, 10 of their 14 goals were assisted. And it wasn't just one assist or one pass, shot, assist, whatever. This was legitimate ball movement. And one of the unassisted goals came off of incredible ball movement as well. And one of the unassisted goals came off of a fast break off of the faceoff. So when I look at all of Denver's goal scoring possessions, I look at it and I'm like, 12 of those 14 goals came off of either opportunistic play or really, really good ball movement. Only two of them relied on hero dodging. And the thing that makes that even more impressive is because when you're in Denver's position and you fall behind the way they did, you can almost excuse hero dodging, particularly from guys like Ted Sullivan and Jack Hanna and Riley Curtis and some of the others who have been so important to their ability to score goals this year. Alex Simmons is another one. He was the one that I was trying to call to mind. That I think there's something to build upon, particularly because I don't think Ohio State's been winning games with their defense. Giving up 12 to Harvard when you had the faceoff advantage, I'm not going to write home about that. Their defense played really well against Notre Dame, but you get to 14 against Ohio State. Justin Nacio is the other faceoff guy. You can feel good and you can build on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know because, you know, I haven't been watching college as closely. What is the, like, impact? This would actually be good for McEwen, but, like, I thought Ohio State was good because I thought they did a very good job.
We're getting him on the podcast next week, by the way.
Oh, nice. I can call him a nerd.
I'm sure he's never.
And then he'll make a very good point, and I'll just say shut up and say something about vibes. What is the impact you think across the board? Because I thought Ohio State did well with their transfer portal and having a more mature team than, like, just looking at their roster's age. If I recall correctly, yeah. Big Ten did well with transfer portals, and they have generally older teams than some of the other programs. Does that sound right, or am I just misremembering something?
No, you're right. I mean, Jason Knox and Drew Blanchard came over from Hobart. They're grad students. Keaton Johnson is an undergrad transfer. I would say those three guys are their most prominent transfers. One of the things that refutes your point a little bit is that they have a few freshmen that are contributing and just providing like a huge injection of athleticism. So Arlie Allen is one of those guys. He's a sophomore, but Greg Langermeyer is their second short stick D-mitty, maybe their third, depending on how the like hierarchy shakes out week to week. So they do have a few freshmen and young guys that are contributing from an athleticism standpoint, but Jason Knox is a third attackman. And then they, you know, and I don't really know how to like calibrate this, so to speak, but Colby Smith missed last year due to COVID and he's back and he's a senior. So, you know, he kind of is like a transfer, even though he's been at Ohio State the whole time. So an infusion of veteran leadership.
Because the take that I was going to, I'm like shoot 80%.
Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah, pew, pew, pew. I was going to say that, like, if we did an analysis on who has the oldest rosters, I think just based off of news, we can check this. Big Ten across the board, Maryland, Ohio State, couple other teams. The older the roster, the better that you start, but the more it wears on you as you go on. And that's not to like compare it to, you know, the NFL or hockey where you have like 30-year-olds playing or anything like that. But it seemed like Denver is a team that just needs a little bit more time to figure it out than an Ohio State. Ohio State came blazing, you know, crushing it right out of the box, right out of the season, right out of the gates, however you want to say it, with some marquee wins. And I think they're getting ready to cool off a little bit. And I think a team like Denver has much more potential to click and make a better second half run than a team like Ohio State. What are your thoughts on that take and how seriously should I be considering that?
So a week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about it in the context of Loyola. And we talked about it from the standpoint of residual fatigue. More emotional than physical. But I talked to a couple of people around the Loyola team over the span of time since we talked about it. And they agree. And they're close, right? And I think for that program in particular, the point that we made about the fact that like they believe they are invincible. There is nothing, there is no back against the wall moment until their back is literally against the wall is a factor. So I think for some of these other teams, like experience begets understanding that it's a long season and that it's not over until it's over. So what does that do to your sense of urgency? But one of the things that's so interesting about it, and this is a natural segue to talk about the three games that we're going to end this podcast talking about, but the Ivy League is the best conference in college across. And I hate framing it that way for reasons that are already stated.
It just doesn't feel right. I feel gross.
Well, I don't hate it for that reason because I love nerds. But that being said, they have not lost a non-conference game in the month of March. And six of the seven teams played conference matchups this weekend, and they were decided by a total of three goals. Cornell 13, Yale 12, Harvard 12, Brown 11. And then, most significantly, Princeton 21, Penn 20 in overtime, which is, laughter is the exact right response. So, I mean, we've got six teams that are clearly top 20. There are arguments to be made that Dartmouth is potentially a top 20 team, which is going to be interesting because they're playing Ohio State on Tuesday, the day this podcast comes out. So, Nick, I mean, these nerds can ball. I don't know what else to say.
And this first off, they can ball. And let me give a special shout out to Jerry Byrne and Will Corrigan, because it is very funny to have two people that you're very close with, one that you look up to and one that you look down upon. And one that I just look down on. You figure out which one it is. But no, Coach Byrne, I think he's, you know, the greatest college
coach. Well, he's 6'3", you're 6'2", and Will's 5'11", right? So I think we can pretty easily figure that out.
Yes. Will, we stand a short king, I think is what the kids say. But it is really funny because they pay attention to what's going on like social media and who's chirping Harvard and this and that. And I'm just gonna say it, like it's funny to have me be someone that they want to use for chirping a little bit. I think it's hilarious.
Like to
I'm
their benefit?
just to like, hey, Nick,
You got
you
our
know,
back?
not even that, just like here's a funny video idea. And it's like me killing someone from Brown, you
Martin
know,
Kemp.
with not Larkin. Yes, Larkin, but it's really funny to see the ACC rivalries start to have like major implications. Harvard Brown was a great game of two very good teams. And what I really love about it, and it goes back to my earlier point, why is conference play important? If it was any other year but this year, I would say, look at all the nerds like trying to give each other wedgies instead of getting shoved in a locker. But the fact that we had a slate of three Ivy League games that all went to one goal, now I'm thinking, holy shit, the Ivy Leagues, I almost just said the ICC, the Ivy Leagues are even more dangerous and deadly than I had thought going into that weekend. So close games become a positive, not a negative. As far as Harvard, I think I'm ready to hitch my wagon to them. I think everything's starting to click. I think the burn method has fully sunk in. Talking to Will, I know that, you know, he's getting his, you know, nose put to the grindstone for him. And I think it's finally starting to pay off. And I have Harvard sneaky being a wagon, call it bias, call it not, but I think this is the start of a serious run for them. So that's my analysis of Harvard Brown.
So I have far more serious analysis, and it's going to end up in your text inbox momentarily.
Love that.
Ausmaj Dronik, who is their leading scorer with 14 goals and 7 assists in 5 games, spatted for the Brown game.
Oh,
I
double
have
spatted.
never seen a lacrosse player spat. This is
Let alone a double
unbelievable.
spat. Are you a hater? Are you saying that's a hater
No.
move?
No. All
I
about it.
am.
You're a
Shut up,
hater?
nerd.
You hate the spell. You played
I
high school
hate the
football.
double
How is that
spat.
possible?
How is that possible? Look at it, Terry.
It looks incredible.
It
That's the
looks
most badass thing
stupid.
I've
You're
seen on
not.
a field this year.
What's next? Double knee braces? Like, you're not playing on offensive line, bro. Chill.
You and I are on opposite ends of the spectrum. How would you feel if he had gone white shoes, black tape?
I would hate it even more.
I had a feeling.
But it almost becomes a point where it's like if he went black tape, white shoes, and like a dumb color sock,
Like
like it.
red
Yeah,
sock. It's got to be
then it
crimson.
becomes so stupid that I'm like, oh, well now it becomes full circle. So it looks just stupid enough to know that he has the chance to think that he looks halfway good, and that's what makes it stupid.
Austin, you look great. I love it. You
Austin,
could
get on
play for
the
the
internet.
Chicago Bears. Don't let
Give me a
Nick.
lap. Hater of the year.
Oh my goodness. Any other games stand out to you?
Did the Princeton overhit
Was my best bet of the
21
weekend.
to 20 is,
Okay,
oh
so
my
here's my thing. I'm glad you brought this up because I am ready to share this with the world. Go over on every 23 and a half and go under on every 27 and a half.
That's the limit, 23 and a half to 27 and a half.
It's college and PLL. It's unbelievable. I don't think I've seen an over or an under on either side of those numbers. And I haven't run the numbers, done the math to figure out where you would end up if you had done one unit on each bet. But my anecdotal evidence suggests very, very strongly that you would be on the positive end of the spectrum if you made those two bets across the board.
I have a feeling we're sneaky in the golden age of lacrosse betting, and I have.
There is no question we're in the golden age of lacrosse betting.
But
Oh yeah, we're gonna let this
I haven't been
book be
dabbling, Terry, because I
completely
still don't know
ignorant
if
to
I'm
the
allowed
situation,
to.
and we're gonna like outsmart them. Yes, that's the moment that we're in.
Then we should be retiring by the end of the year.
No, I'm not
Maybe we
betting.
start a hedge fund. Maybe we start the lacrosse betting hedge fund. Did I ever tell you our idea about starting an OnlyFans, but it's just our lacrosse predictions. And it was going to be called Nick's Hot Picks. Investors.
All right. Possibly everybody you. Who has made it to this point of the podcast and wonders why Nick is my co-host, that is the answer.
We'll have a business idea of the week, and that's week one.
Nick's Hot Picks.
What do you do? Oh, I'm on OnlyFans. Oh, really? Yeah. For my lacrosse gambling picks. And Dan Arestia's feet. So
tomorrow we've got Harvard -1.5 +120 against Boston University. I think they're at home. Jerry was trying to coin a nickname for this game. I think he said the Storo Drive Showdown or the Charles River Chalice. That's not something. Right. Chastity Belt. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what he said. Over under 24 and a half. Chastity Belt.
I have Harvard winning in a blowout to stay consistent with my earlier take, and I think we should just call it the
F. You don't think this is a trap game?
No.
Why not?
Why do you? You know what
I think it shouldn't be a trap game from the standpoint of the fact that they have Dartmouth and Colgate on the backside, right? So it's like you're not gonna get caught looking ahead. But I gotta think they feel pretty good about themselves. Michigan and Brown, they definitely didn't expect to win those two games before the season started. A team that had never beaten Holy Cross. No player on this Harvard team had beaten Holy Cross before this year.
Well, because Holy Cross is slept on. No. You know why I don't like Boston?
As a city or
as the Terriers? Team, the Terriers.
They're undefeated.
And I just want to say this is my bias coming into play, and credit to me for recognizing it.
When Isn't
I was
coaching the only game that you watch the Merrimack BU game because you're related by dating to somebody on the team?
Yes. First off, thank you for calling out that I have a girlfriend, sick brag. Credit to me for that. And yes, I watched Merrimack Boston, and it just wasn't a good game. And when I was at Air Force, Boston played Air Force. They won, and they weren't very nice about it, is how I'll phrase it. So
they beat you. Boston.
You should have been nicer to Air Force in 2017, and now you're getting slightly chirped on an Inside Lacrosse podcast 4 years later.
The tailgate.
Yeah.
5 years.
5 years. Math. I almost Go said ahead. Three. How far off would that have been? Jesus.
Well, I mean, like COVID, you know, this thing happened over the course of the last 2 years, right?
I don't know. Yes. But
hey, Nick, tell us how you feel about masks.
About masks?
I don't want to hear about your opinions on mask policy.
I am not going to get in the water. I am not going to get in the water. I spent too much time diffusing it at Thanksgiving, and I am not willing to do it publicly.
Well, I can tell you Steve Gutt appreciates your decision not to jump in the water.
I was talking about that the other day. The time with my seal, the time I spent with the seals is defined by two things. One, almost dying, and two, my balls exploding. So for someone who contributed negatively to the success of the on field, I really think I made a good mark off the
field. They made you the face and voice of the franchise. So I would certainly endorse that.
And all it took was almost dying and going to the hospital for surgery, emergency surgery. What? Yeah. Oh, God. Ugh. So wear a cup, kids. Wear a cup.
All right, Nick, which is going to be the next Notre Dame team to lose?
Which is going to be the next Notre Dame team to lose?
Yeah. Is the baseball play tonight?
No, baseball's number one. Did you see that in like one of the polls? See that, we have a nasty baseball team.
Hockey. They in the Frozen Four.
I'll say hockey, even though we do have a good hockey team. I'm trying to think of other spring sports, like maybe some ricochet shot.
indoor track, you're going to have a pole vaulter break his pole as he's going over like a ACC record attempt.
Yeah. Maybe like golf, because it's always freezing. It's like, oh, hey, I go to Notre Dame to be a golfer. Oh, what did you do? Well, you're not going to believe it, but we hit the inside simulator again. And we're going to, you know, Miami to play a tournament against the U. It's like, yeah, well, no wonder you're getting your asses kicked. So I'll say golf.
Great job pulling back on multiple expletives that I know were on the tip of your tongue right there.
Oh, and good job for you as well. Good job.
Thank you.
All around.
That'll do it for this edition of the Tailgate. It was perpetually loose. If you've made it this far, you should know that Mondays are Sundays here at the Inside Lacrosse HQ, and we took advantage, and we hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back next week with more Tailgate Podcast.
Love you, Terry.
Hey, I'm Terry Foley.
And I'm Nick Osello. Welcome to the Tailgate.